Welcome back to Disclaimers Aside, a bi-weekly podcast where I share the stories of people in my community, Disclaimers Aside. I'm your host, Aisara Amadou, and let's dive into this week's episode. Hello everyone and welcome back to Disclaimers Aside. I hope you guys are having a great week, or I hope you guys had a great week if you guys are listening to this on a Saturday. I wanted to say thank you to all of the positive feedback that came back from the last podcast episode, All About Love. I was actually surprised by how many people reached out and said that they absolutely loved the episode and the different things that people took from the episode. It was really something that I just kind of spontaneously decided to do this month, and it took 2 weeks to put together, but I'm glad that I was able to I'm glad the turnaround time was quick enough to where I could get it up by the end of February. And I honestly really, really appreciate all of the voices that went into that episode. It really couldn't have happened without all of the different people going into it. I had no idea what everyone's responses were going to be, but listening to it as I was editing it, I feel like I took so much from all of the different perspectives that were featured. And so that episode will always be my favorite episode and will be really, really close to my heart. If you haven't given it a listen, make sure to go listen to it. I'll have it linked in the show notes. But yeah, Ramadan is around the corner, and I feel like this Ramadan, what I'm really trying to do differently is actually take the 2 weeks leading into Ramadan to really prepare. I feel like I always kind of just wait until the few days leading up to Ramadan or the day before Ramadan to sit down and figure out what I want to change about Ramadan or what I want to take away from Ramadan, setting my intentions. The prep for Ramadan should be done over the course of at least a week or two leading up to Ramadan. You really do have to prepare yourself mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally for Ramadan because it is all-consuming and it really demands a lot from you. It demands the most self-discipline that you can give. I posted on my TikTok 9 easy ways that you guys can prepare for Ramadan, but by the time you guys are listening to this episode, it will already be the start of Ramadan. So Ramadan Kareem, I hope you guys have been having an incredible Ramadan. This is gonna be my last Ramadan in college, at least my last Ramadan in undergrad, so I'm really trying to take the most out of it. I feel like this Ramadan will be a lot easier than last year's just because I live in an apartment and I also live much closer to public transit and I have better access to public transit, so it'll be a lot easier to go to Tarawih more regularly. Last year going to Tarawih was really, really challenging. I really did try to do my best, but it was really difficult just because I didn't really live near public transit and it can run pretty late. Also, having roommates that are Muslim also really helps, I think, during Ramadan. I think Ramadan is really a time to just be surrounded by community. It's really, really important that during Ramadan, we're always constantly checking in on the people around us, especially Muslims that are new to the area or revert Muslims, just because for some revert Muslims, this may be their first Ramadan. They may not know, where to go. They may not know how to access community, and community is so, so important to Ramadan. So make sure you're checking in with the people around you, making sure that the people around you always have an iftar to go to on campus or off campus. If they need someone to go to Tarawih with and you're planning on going to Tarawih, just reaching out to people to make sure that people feel that sense of community during the month of Ramadan, and it'll go a long way. I want to talk about the Avatar The Last Airbender live action real quick because it came out 2 weeks ago. By the time you guys are listening to this, I watched it immediately as soon as it came out and I have a lot of thoughts. I'm not gonna go in depth and give an entire review of the entire show just because that could be a whole podcast episode in and of itself, but I will say I actually didn't hate it. Disclaimers aside, I would probably say that that's my unpopular opinion of this week. I didn't necessarily love it, but I also didn't hate it. I was actually surprised. I feel like with this live action, there were definitely a lot of critiques that I had. I definitely feel like they could have done certain characters like Azula better. I just feel like Azula's character was not really spot on. I think they wrote her character to be a little more insecure and a little less villainous and psychotic than in the show. And I feel like they kind of went in a different direction with her character, which I personally didn't love. I also feel like I don't know what's up with Aang's actor, but his acting was killing me throughout the season. Other than that, I will say I feel like they're adding a lot of character development specifically to the villain characters. Like, I feel like with Zuko's character, I actually really, really like what they're doing. I feel like they're adding a lot of nuance and a better understanding of, like, what motivates Zuko and why he is the way he is from season one. Whereas I feel like in the animated series, he got this beautiful, beautiful redemption arc, one of the most incredible redemption arcs that I've ever seen in fiction. But it kind of came more in season three. Whereas they're kind of laying the groundwork for it in season one. And I feel like the way that they're doing that is just so good. Because you know how much growth Zuko goes through as a character. So to be able to see him go on that journey and start that journey from season one is absolutely incredible. I also feel like they are just adding little changes and making little tweaks to really refresh the show and make it more politically correct in a good way. The show writers intentionally took out a lot of the elements of sexism in terms of Sokka's humor, which love that. I also loved how they kind of made specific changes in terms of Katara's journey with waterbending and just kind of making her more seem like a more self-actualized person. I feel like my main critiques, though, I will say, is definitely the fact that they take out a lot of, like, the training. They don't really have enough training sequences, and I feel like it kind of just doesn't really make sense, because you're like, oh, all of a sudden Katara's really, really good at waterbending, and it's like, where did that even come from? I also feel like in general they're really trying to cram the plot together. They're really trying to take the highlights of the season and cram it together, and so they're overlapping a bunch of plot lines that, like, sometimes make sense, but sometimes I'm like, wait, this is not really making sense. I think having finished the show, that last episode, the finale, was so good, and I feel like if the show writers really continue that energy for season 2 and 3, this could actually be a really, really good live action. I was really doubtful going into it. I feel like after 2010, like, we're all a little bit scarred, and I also feel like I just don't think there's really a need for there to be a live action. I don't think there necessarily needs to be a live action for every single piece of work or animated series. But I will say I do like the direction that this live action is going in, and I feel like this is a great opportunity to do things that they weren't able to necessarily do in the animated series. So I'm definitely interested to see how season 2 and 3 go, but I definitely think I've heard a lot of people just really dragging the live action on social media. And I kind of understand it to a certain degree, but I do think we got to give them their flowers a little bit and recognize some of the changes that were made to the show that are making the story better. This week's Wreck of the Week is not going to be Avatar The Last Airbender, but is actually going to be a book called Yellowface by R.F. Kuang. I'm sure you guys have heard of this book. It was really, really popular when it came out a couple months ago. R.F. Kuang is a pretty popular author. I think she's the author of Babel. I've always wanted to read an R.F. Kuang book, and I started reading Yellowface actually last semester on my Kindle, but then I stopped because I gave my Kindle to my sister to borrow for the semester. So I just ended up re-downloading the audiobook using one of my Audible credits on it, and the audiobook is so incredible. They need to give whoever did the narration for this audiobook a raise, because the amount of emotions, the inflections that went into the narration of this audiobook, it brings the story to life. Already the writing style is just absolutely incredible, but I feel like the narrator even just brought the story to another level with their acting. Yellowface is about a young white author who steals the manuscript of her dead Asian friend, finishes it, and publishes it as her own. And it's really a book where you're in the mind of this villain, and you watch as she justifies everything that she's doing. You see kind of the things that motivate her. I think this was a really interesting book because you get to kind of get a little bit of a look inside the publishing world, but through such a unique perspective, because she literally stole a woman's writing. It brings up conversations about diversity in the publishing space and how that has become something that is almost like commodified and has become like a capitalist tool. It talks about cancel culture, it touches on race baiting, it touches on plagiarism and copyright and inspiration and free speech. It touches on all of these really, really interesting conversations in such an interesting way. It's just written in a very witty writing style. Like, I really did enjoy the writing style. I was constantly immersed. Like, I was obsessed with listening to this audiobook. It kept me drawn in the entire time. And I feel like it was one of the most unique books that I've read. It was definitely very horrifying to listen to. I feel like it brings up a lot of really important conversations, especially being someone who reads a lot and then also having experiences like in book reviewing spaces and book blogging spaces. Really seeing kind of the other end of things is really interesting to see. I really love this one, and I definitely think it's one that everyone should read. So this week I really wanted to talk about the rise of Muslim third spaces. This is kind of like inspired by the month of Ramadan. I feel like this has been something I've been wanting to talk about on Disclaimers Aside because there has been such a rise of Muslim third spaces, especially in Berkeley. I've also seen it a little bit in Southern California, but really in the Bay is where I've seen it a lot. And I feel like it is doing well in places like the Bay because the Bay is such an interconnected area. It's also doing really well in like places like New York. And again, with the public transit, I feel like these are all very well connected areas. Whereas places like Southern California aren't nearly as connected. The public transit system isn't as great. People live predominantly in suburbs that are a little bit further away from each other. And so it's really in these interconnected spaces where we're kind of seeing third spaces thrive. So what is a third space? According to Google, a third space is a familiar public spot where you regularly connect with others known and unknown over a shared interest or activity. The term was coined by Ray Oldenburg in the early 1990s as increasing work hours and more heavily siloed communities became the norm. Because when you have access to everything you could possibly want or need at home or online, leaving the house becomes optional. So when we're thinking about third spaces, you have to think about the home as like the primary space and work as the secondary space. And that makes everything else third spaces. So coffee shops, museums, lounges, libraries, community centers, these are all third spaces. It's really just a place outside of home and work. Oldenburg argued third spaces are necessary for well-being. He said, quote, "What suburbia cries for are the means for people to gather easily, inexpensively, regularly, and pleasurably. A place on the corner. Real-life alternatives to television, easy escapes from the cabin fever of marriage and family life that don't necessitate getting into automobiles." I think before the rise of technology and social media, we relied a lot more on third spaces for entertainment, connection, and community. Third spaces were really the source of social interaction. When you think about it, people used to go to coffee shops and bookstores and museums and actually go up to people, go up to strangers and introduce themselves and make connections. These were places and sources of community. I think coming out of the pandemic, there was a huge, huge craving again for third spaces because we went almost 3 years really without complete access to them. I'm personally someone who really thrives when I live in an area with a lot of third spaces. That's what I really learned about myself when I came to college. It's like I really, really thrive with places with access to a lot of third spaces. A lot of the reason why I feel like I struggled socially when I used to go to Santa Cruz is the fact that it is pretty much all in nature, and it's a very inaccessible campus that doesn't really have a ton of third spaces on and off campus, and things are really, really far away. And then obviously coming to Berkeley, it's this complete opposite environment. It's a campus that is in a very urban area that has coffee shops for days, coffee shops for all the different occasions. You just have third spaces everywhere, and I really, really thrive in these types of settings. I'm definitely the type of person where I love my alone time, but at the same time, I also love being surrounded by people. So I think being able to sit in like a coffee shop and do my homework surrounded by the ambiance of people, or read my book and people, I really thrive in. Like, I love sitting in a cafe, reading my book in the summertime and just being able to people watch in between pages. There's just something so peaceful about being surrounded by people, but not necessarily feeling an obligation to interact. Just being able to take a backseat and maybe strike up a conversation with a new person when someone walks in with an interesting outfit, but not necessarily being forced into that, you know? It's like this in-between social setting. It's not like you're at like a function or an event where you feel the pressure to... Is it a podcast if I don't hear sirens at least once? It's not like you're at a function or an event where you feel socially pressured to actually go up to people and have conversations. You can kind of just sit there and relax and be basking in the presence of other people, but also not feel obligated to do that. And I think while there is a sort of contentment that can come from being at home and forming these like routines, sometimes it can feel isolating when you go for weeks and weeks and weeks on end of just days and days where you're just at work and home and work and home and work and home. You're not getting out, you're not seeing new people, seeing, being in new environments and experiencing different ambiances. That can get very lonely and isolating, at least for me. I think too, I've noticed I'm definitely the most creative and inspired by the things and the people around me. So when I'm surrounded by people a lot, I feel the sense of inspiration a lot. Like, it's a lot of the times when I'm sitting in a coffee shop by myself and it's like in between, it's maybe I'm taking a work break or it's in between me reading the pages of a book and I'm just sitting there like watching people interact with one another and just people watching, to be honest, is when I feel the most inspired. And in general, I think we're getting to a point societally where we don't have a ton of third spaces, like at least in American society. I was listening to a podcast where they were basically talking about how Europe has a lot more free third spaces, but I would say in the US, a lot of the third spaces, there is kind of a paywall or like some kind of financial barrier to accessing third spaces. There aren't a ton of free museums anymore. People really don't go to libraries a ton. And a lot of coffee shops are really, really, really expensive. Like, if you go to a coffee shop these days, back when I was in high school, it used to be like $3-$4 to buy a coffee. Now it's literally, you can pay $8 for a coffee in Berkeley. It's actually insane. And that's challenging because that puts kind of like a financial barrier to that. But at the same time, it's like, that conversation is definitely important for those local businesses and for the workers that are laboring. But also, when you're really thinking about it, it's like, it's not really the workers who are receiving the compensation or the financial compensation of those prices being high. It's like the owner or the corporation or whatever it may be. So recently, there's definitely been, I would say, a rise in Muslim third spaces, specifically Muslim coffee shops. That's really what I'm talking about when I say Muslim third spaces. Muslim coffee shops have definitely been kind of spearheading this movement of Muslim third spaces, but it's also really nice to see like little Muslim clothing boutiques and Muslim bookstores popping up more often. It really did kind of start with the craze of the Yemeni coffee shops. I was hanging out with my friend Noon last year. We wanted to get coffee, it was pretty late, so a lot of the standard coffee shops had closed. And she took me to this coffee shop in San Francisco called Della. It was this Yemeni coffee shop in Union Square. And immediately when I walked in, it was like hanging lights, Arab music was playing, could smell the bahur in the back, tables just full of Muslims and people of different like Middle Eastern backgrounds. And immediately I was like, I love this vibe. Della is what I would describe as like the Kawa House of California. I know Kawa House is the Yemeni coffee shop that's really popular in New York. And so I'm not sure when Della opened in San Francisco. I think it opened 2 years ago. So it opened like a year before I went because it had been open only for a year that first time that I went. But I was immediately just enveloped by this feeling of being at home, like seeing the Yemeni couches that look very similar to the couches that we have in Mauritania, like listening to Arab music and just being surrounded by Muslims. And it brought a sense of home, like a sense of home away from home that I think is so, so rare in American society. And that was the first time that I experienced something like that in the US. And I think that's really what stood out that first time that I went to Della, was like that feeling of being at home again. I love the vibe of Della. So much so that last year I was always going to San Francisco with friends to go to Della, and it was my favorite coffee shop. And so midway through the year, when they opened up a location in Oakland, I switched to go to the Oakland one. I kid you not, there was a period of time where for like a month and a half straight, every single weekend, I was going to Della. I was always going to Della. It wasn't always of my own volition. Half the time I would get invited by people who wanted to go to Della, and I loved taking people to Della who hadn't heard about it before. So I was obsessed with that place. It was actually a running joke. Like, everyone knew me as that person that was always at Della. Fast forward, it's over the summer, and I find out that Della is opening a location in Berkeley. And I was so excited because my junior year, Della should have gone to Footnote. Like, I loved going to Della. And to be able to have that access to that anytime I want was so exciting, just because I always had to take the BART at least 15 to 20 minutes, half the time cross the bay to even just be able to go to Della. And so I was so excited. They actually opened the Della in Berkeley on my birthday. So after my birthday dinner, we all went to Della afterwards for some chai. First semester, I was always at Della. They opened up right across the street from campus, so it was really, really convenient. And what was different from the Berkeley Della from the other locations was that because it was so close to campus and everyone went, it was just kind of like a space to like literally go study with friends, see Muslims on campus. And it felt really even more like a community space. Like, I loved being able to go to Della and like run into five different people while I'm doing homework, or chat with people in between studying for an exam or writing a paper. It really brought the community aspect of Third Spaces to home. Eventually, other Muslim Third Spaces opened up. This Palestinian coffee shop opened up in Berkeley called Old Jerusalem Coffee. This one's actually such a cool vibe. I love going to Old Jerusalem because even though it's a Palestinian-owned coffee shop, because of its location, there's always just a lot of Black Muslims like hanging out at Old Jerusalem Coffee. And I feel like the vibes are just so good at Old Jerusalem Coffee. It is definitely a little bit further, and their hours aren't the best. I think they close at like 3 or 4 p.m. They close pretty early. I feel like I'm definitely more of like a late afternoon, night coffee shop kind of person. So I go there kind of every so often, but I still love that coffee shop and I feel like it's such a vibe. And then recently, at the beginning of spring semester, this Desi Chai spot opened up in downtown Berkeley called Elaichi, which I've learned means cardamom, and it is so good. I feel like there have been so many Arab coffee shops. The Yemenis are definitely taking over Berkeley, because after Della opened, a bunch of other ones opened, like this other Yemeni coffee shop opened on San Pablo Avenue called Hema Coffee, and there's also another one in San Francisco too that my cousin told me about. But it was really nice to see a coffee shop open that wasn't necessarily Arab, and the grand opening for it, I already knew it was going to be good because the shop itself just has such a sleek design. It's like basically they have chai and then they have like cardamom syrup, so you can add that to espresso. I love their karak chai. That's the one that I tried. It's really good. I think it's like a stronger chai. It's really, really good. And then I had the best cappuccino I've had in my life, because one day I went with some friends and I just was not in the mood for chai. So I got a cappuccino, an oat milk cappuccino, and I added their cardamom syrup, which I met this girl who's actually family friends with the people who own the place, and she was telling me that it's a family business and that they make all of their syrups in-house and from scratch, so they're all very natural, which is really nice, just because, you know, obviously with going to coffee shops a lot, like, you have to know that syrups are a lot of the times made with a lot of processed ingredients are not really the best for you. So it's really nice to know like they're making things with like natural ingredients, and you can definitely taste it too. Like, you can taste how fresh everything is. You see them in the back in the kitchen making things. But I got their cappuccino with the cardamom syrup, and it was so fire. I drank that cappuccino in 3 minutes, no exaggeration. It was so good. But there's just been a huge rise in all of these Muslim third spaces back in SoCal. There's one that opened up that is like the Della of SoCal. It's called Camaria. It's a Yemeni coffee shop that opened up in Fullerton Garden Grove area, like pretty close to the Garden Grove Mission. I'm sure there's more I just don't really know about just because I haven't really explored the coffee shop scene in Orange County for a bit. But I definitely hope that this wave and this movement expands to Orange County, because as I'm coming to the end of my undergrad, I would love to have some like some Muslim third spaces to be able to like go to while I'm back at home. But there's definitely been a movement in these Muslim third spaces. And I think the reason why they are so appealing is, one, I think especially right now, people are becoming more and more conscious of the way that they are consumers, especially with what's happening with the genocide that's happening. People are becoming so much more aware of like where our money is going. Social media really, really helps spread information about what companies are donating money to the genocide, and understanding that and being cognizant of that, being able to spread that information very easily, is making Gen Z a lot more cognizant of how we show up in the world as consumers. And so I think people value a lot more where their money is going towards when they're going out and buying things like their morning coffee, because it is a non-essential. And it's like when you are going to these third spaces, it's like you're not only investing your money, but you're investing your time. Like consciously, there is a moral weight that's being put on yourself when you're going to a third space, when you're investing in it financially and emotionally and morally. There's a moral burden that's being placed on you when you are buying into these third spaces that may be supporting a genocide. And I think that's great that we're becoming conscious consumers. I don't think, you know, it's possible to completely be the purest consumer, but I think being more conscious of like where our money is going is really, really important. And it's something that we're seeing at, you know, younger and younger ages, which is good, because I feel like being conscious of like where your money is going is definitely something that I think develops a little bit later, or can tend to develop a little bit later. But it's like, you know, you're seeing people like in high school being conscious of like where their money is going and learning the power of what a boycott means and what it can do on a social and political level. So I think part of it is that we are as a society becoming a lot more conscious of where our money is going. And so part of what is appealing to Muslim third spaces, for example, if you are trying not to buy things that are going to go towards the genocide, is like, you know that where your money is going is a safe source. Most importantly, it's really the sense of community, I think, that comes from going to Muslim third spaces, especially living in a society where Muslims are the minority, where Muslims are marginalized. It's really hard to find third spaces where we can find one another, that where we can make connections, and that can really feel like a place that connects us to our different homelands. Even though, you know, there is so much diversity in the Muslim identity, and that there's no single culture to the Muslim identity, I think there are definitely commonalities, and there are things that tie us to one another as Muslims. And there is that feeling of home, that feeling of connection that really comes from being able to go to Muslim third spaces. And I think that's why it is so important and something that's beautiful to see, especially now that it is Ramadan. Being able to have access to Muslim third spaces is so important. Like, it is these coffee shops that are going to be the post that we link up for people during Ramadan. It is these third spaces that non-Muslims may come into contact and first receive the message of Islam. And so it is important on a level that goes beyond just, you know, having an aesthetic coffee shop to study at. It has political implications, it has religious implications, it has moral implications. Like it's more than just a coffee shop. A third space has so much meaning in our lives, and I think that's why it's really, really important that we bring third spaces back. I think recently I have been thinking about just like how much the world, social media has changed the world. And I was telling my friend the other day, like, I wish that I could just not be on social media. And I know you're probably listening and you're thinking, we'll just delete social media, but it's definitely hard. I think being in the position where I love content creation, like I love, you know, having this podcast, things, the things that I do on social media are more than just going on social media and just posting about my life. Like, I do think that there is, I would hope at least, that there is more value that comes from social media, but I hate the way that social media has changed our society. I hate the way that we can't just go to a coffee shop and strike up a conversation in the same way that we could 25, 30 years ago. I hate that because of the rise of social media, that third spaces don't mean the same thing that they do today that they used to. And so that's why I think this conversation is really, really important. And it's something that has been on my heart and something that I've definitely wanted to talk about. So I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode. Take this as your sign to get on TikTok and find some cool third spaces in your area, some local businesses to support. Business is tough. Business is tough, and it's really the small businesses that feel the brunt of the challenges whenever the economy is down. Ramadan Mubarak. I hope you guys are having a blessed month, and I will chat with you guys in my next episode. Bye.